This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 239 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. A couple of things before digging into this week's questions. First, the night has come. Finally, it's draft night. If you didn't know, now you know. Second, I'll be live blogging this year's draft. I'll be tweeting a link out on Thursday evening, which you can get if you follow me on Twitter, at LateRoundQB. But I'll be tweeting the link before the draft begins, and you can hit that page whenever you want for my take on a lot of the picks. And I'll try to add things like my projections when offensive players are selected. I'll be doing that on both Thursday and Friday. I think Friday is going to be a bigger day for fantasy purposes, but Thursday is still going to be a lot of fun. So please don't miss out on that. I promise I'll make it worthwhile. Also, as a reminder, FanDuel is offering you a free shot at two tickets to the NBA Finals. Every night of the playoffs from now until May 14th, they'll run a free qualifier with $1,000 in prizes. If you win, you will then advance to another contest at the end of the playoffs where you could win a share of $20,000 in prizes and two tickets to the finals. For more information on the NBA Fantasy Playoffs, visit FanDuel.com or download the app today. Eligibility restrictions may apply. Now, I'm sure if you listen to this mailbag show on Saturday or Sunday, I'll sound like an idiot with some of my draft predictions. That'll happen. But not all of the questions I got this week were NFL draft related. So it's not like everything's irrelevant if you're listening to this past Thursday. So with that being said, let's dig in. This first question is from at DJKJNR. Loved the pod, good analysis, and well explained, as per. Have you got some hesitation over Kelvin Harmon? So this question came after Tuesday's rankings podcast, so in response to the fact that I didn't have Kelvin Harmon in my top 10 wide receivers. Now for what it's worth, Harmon is a fringe top 10 guy for me. But I don't love him because there was nothing that really stood out to me with his game, both through watching and via the numbers. I'm worried that he's not going to be quick enough at the next level, and his measurables sort of reflected that. He had a really, really average combine. His height-adjusted speed score was fine, but he scored really poorly everywhere else. And from a production standpoint, he wasn't bad by any means, he just didn't stand out with what I think is a pretty deep class. During his final season at NC State, Harmon had about 29% of the team's receiving yards, just 24% of their receptions, and 28% of their touchdowns. Now, the positive is that his sophomore year had really good production. That's why I really considered putting him in my top 10. And I think there's a chance that he ends up there when this draft is over and we see his draft equity and landing spot. So I don't hate Kelvin Harmon at all. I think he has an opportunity to be pretty good in the NFL. I just may not like him as much as others do in the industry pre-draft. This next question is an email from Mike. It says, is it better to own third down backs on bad teams since they're on a team that is usually behind in scoring? So to be honest, Mike, it's not really that optimal to have third down backs in your fantasy rosters in general. You need more from the position than just that. Like, let's just use last year as our example. If you look at the top running backs and targets, so we'll look at the top 15 or players with about 60 or more targets. The backs who weren't workhorses or every down players who were getting that much volume through the air were Tariq Cohen, Nyheim Hines, Jalen Richard, TJ Yeldon, Theo Riddick, Kenyon Drake, and Deion Lewis. You could even go to the next one with Duke Johnson. Of those players, Tariq Cohen was really the only reliable fantasy asset. Like, as many catches as Jalen Richard had last year, he still just had two top 20 performances. Nyheim Hines had four, but a couple of them were completely unpredictable. And Yeldon's relevant weeks came because he was seeing more work on the ground. And Kenyon Drake had weekly upside, but he was also unpredictable. And Deion Lewis, Duke Johnson, and Theo Riddick were obnoxious to actually start last year, too. They rarely had foreseeable production. Now, all of those guys did come from bad offenses for the most part. Without doing a study on it and just by going by intuition, to answer your question, yes. I would say that if you're targeting a third down back, it's not a terrible idea to get one on a bad team without a lot of pass-catching options. Jalen Richard is a great example of that. Or at least Jalen Richard from 2018. But number one, we won't always know who those bad teams are. And number two, even when these guys are seeing a ton of volume through the air in PPR formats, they're more filler players than actual game changers. Because a lot of times they don't come with many touchdowns. I don't think it's a bad idea to target players who we think will be pass catching specialists because that at least guarantees that they're going to be on the field. And then if they perform well, maybe they end up seeing more work on the ground and close to the goal line as a result. But I think the overall answer here is that players who don't have three down upside are fine in deeper formats, but for the majority of fantasy leagues, they won't move the needle. They're fine, but they're not great. This next question is from Twitter, from at Jamie Whiteman. Any players to trade ahead of the NFL draft given rumors about their teams drafting that position? Thinking specifically about the rumblings of a running back picked by the Colts and Marlon Mack, or a wide receiver in Denver and Cortland Sutton. So I don't think the Colts are going to spend any sort of substantial pick on a running back. I don't think they need to, but they also have a savvy GM in Chris Ballard who's going to understand the value of a running back. Plus, they have bigger needs. I think logically, given the moves that we've seen them make, they're not going to spend a day one or day two pick on a back. Now, I could be wrong about this, but I think it's a logical prediction. And then I don't really think that you should worry that much about Cortland Sutton as it relates to the draft. You should be worried about Sutton as it relates to him as a player in the situation that he's in. Now, I'm cool with anyone wanting to sell him right now. I'm kind of in the middle of the road to below consensus on that Broncos offense overall. I think you've got to probably watch Dante Pettis and what the 49ers do, but I also don't think that we're going to see a scenario where he just goes away because of the draft. And that's the thing. With wide receivers, this kind of question isn't as relevant. It's hard for a rookie wide receiver to make a guy obsolete. And talent matters a lot more at wide receiver than it does at running back for fantasy purposes. So like, if you like Dante Pettis, don't sell Dante Pettis even though the 49ers are likely to draft a wide receiver. Sell Dante Pettis because you think that the market value is higher than it should be. So I think this question is more geared towards running back, because a back can come in and completely take away volume from a player, and he can do it right away. So let's just shift our attention there. Which teams need running backs the most? Now, I would say that Oakland is at the top of the list, but there's no running back there who's locked in as a starter anyway. So there's no one to sell. Chicago's another team that needs one, but they're also not picking until round three, so at least Mike Davis's competition may not be as strong. He's also not someone who's valued very highly. But the Bears have had the most visits at running back this offseason. I should note that. I'd say three teams with players who are sell-worthy would be the Chiefs, Eagles, and Texans. Now, I've got a lot of Damian Williams in Dynasty. And to be honest, I haven't been quick to trade him away. Mostly because the upside is still really insane for him if he sees a significant role in that offense. And I'm not a big fan of this running back draft class in general. And I also think that the Chiefs have much bigger issues than at running back, especially after signing Carlos Hyde. But I will say that Williams is hypothetically one of those backs that some fantasy managers may not be totally comfortable with right now. I get it. Now, the Eagles have brought in a lot of running backs this offseason as well, and if I've got Jordan Howard, I would be selling Jordan Howard right now. Not only has Philly historically been a committee team, but Howard's not a special talent, and the Eagles have multiple second rounders and multiple fourth rounders. So there's at least a chance that they get a back in the first four rounds. And then there's the Texans. Now, Lamar Miller is an underrated player, in my opinion. But he also is 28 this year, and he's a free agent in 2020. So there's a chance that Miller has this year as a starter, but there's not going to be much for him after 2019. And if the Texans decide to get a running back in this draft, which would make a lot of sense, that's more competition for Lamar Miller. So he's another potential sell. Now, I tend to ride the notion that we overstate what these rookies will do to veterans across the league. We know there are only going to be a handful of guys who actually pan out in this draft and become super relevant in fantasy. And what that means is, a lot of the veterans we think aren't safe, they will be safe. This next question is from @fire_and_geis. Now that Marshawn has retired, what do you think about Chris Warren? I'm not really a Chris Warren guy. Now, the dude is massive and I get the allure, but you guys know that I care a lot about production and how it translates to the NFL level. Unless a player shows us lack of production doesn't matter for them, which Warren hasn't, I'm going to look at what they did in college to help judge what they can do in the NFL. And in college, Warren didn't have good production. Now, just for some context, his final season saw him with fewer than 6 carries per game and a 14% attempt share. He did have a 6% reception share, but that's not nearly enough to boost his overall profile. And then he wasn't even drafted. I just think that if we take a step back and look at Chris Warren objectively, the Dynasty community seems to like him a lot more than they should. Now, this isn't to say that there's a 0.0% chance that he pans out, but if he does become relevant in fantasy, he'll 1,000,000% be a huge outlier. And that's not something I'm ever going to bank on. Is he a fine flyer? Sure, he's in a backfield that has no clear-cut starter right now, though I'm guessing that changes through the draft. But he's in a backfield that doesn't have anything close to a stud, so sure, he's a flyer. But he's not someone who has a high chance of succeeding in the NFL given his profile. And I can think of a lot of other flyers I'd rather have than Chris Warren. This next question is from @JoshWarwick. How much does a team like the Vikings drafting non-fantasy positions affect the fantasy positions? I.e., if the Vikings were to draft O-line, would that bump up Cook and Cousins? In situations like this, my feelings are to not overthink it. If the Vikings grab an offensive lineman in the draft, we don't know if that lineman is truly an upgrade or not. I think we could say that it's likely to be an upgrade, and maybe you feel more confident in drafting Cousins or Cook, but it really shouldn't move the needle that much. And honestly, this reminds me of the Khalil Mack trade last year. There were people who became higher on Jordan Howard last season because of that trade, since the Bears were likely to play in more positive game scripts. Like, I get the logic, but it's such a stretch to pinpoint that single thing to Jordan Howard's stat line. There are so many things that are more important than that, and we don't even know if that thing is even important at all. Now, I get that an offensive lineman is more closely tied to a running back and a quarterback's play, but in the end, it's not always worth complicating things. Because usually, when we do that, we overstate the impact. We'll bump up Dalvin Cook way too much. We'll say Kirk Cousins has a higher ceiling than he actually does. And that's a subjective way to play fantasy football. So do these picks matter? Yeah, of course they matter. They can make an impact. But don't lose sight of fantasy football's basics, like the fact that volume drives the game first and foremost. This next question is from @DavisMatic. How much does your model weight round versus pick used in terms of future equity, i.e. how big of a difference between pick 50 and pick 100 for projecting? Yeah, so everything inputted is by overall pick and not by round. But it's also not linear. As in, a running back getting drafted 10th overall versus a running back getting drafted 40th overall is much more significant than a running back getting drafted 130th overall versus one getting drafted 160th overall. Now, the difference in both of those scenarios is 30 picks. But we know through looking at historical trends and how running backs produce in fantasy that those 30 picks aren't equal. And I have found that draft equity matters more at running back than at wide receiver. I don't think that's all that surprising, though. When you think about it, running backs gain value in fantasy by simply seeing the field. If a team spends a high pick on one of those running backs, they're going to throw them on the field. And that produces fantasy points. Receivers need to beat defenders and create separation to see that volume. That's why targets is a talent statistic. So talent matters more. Situation still matters, but talent is a bigger deal than at running back. So it's just not as shocking when a third or fourth round wide receiver becomes something. I mean, just as a really bare bones example, you can look at the top 10 wide receivers in points per game last year and see this. Only DeAndre Hopkins, Julio Jones, and Mike Evans among the top 10 were first round picks. At running back, we had Todd Gurley, Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey, Ezekiel Elliott, and Melvin Gordon as first rounders in the top 10 at the position. And what's crazy is that not only is that more than at wide receiver, but over the last 5 years, we've only had 8 first round running back picks. 20 of them have been wide receivers. So the sample of wideouts drafted in the first is a lot larger, but the hit rate from a fantasy perspective is insane at running back. That's because of what I talked about with seeing the field. But also, the position is easier to evaluate. But that ties into this question because the running back model will weigh draft costs more than the wide receiver one. So it's not just one singular trend for all positions. But it's by overall pick, it's weighed differently by position, and the gap in draft selection isn't looked at the same way. This next question is from @DominateFF. What is the ceiling for Devin Funchess in 2019? Yeah, you know, the Colts didn't have a second wide receiver throughout 2018, or at least one that was reliable, and they still finished 15th in fantasy scoring at the position. So fantasy points are there to be had in that offense. From a projection standpoint, Funchess has came out with 83 targets, 49 receptions, 592 yards, and 4-5 touchdowns. That type of projection is basically just a player who sits on your bench. He's like a wide receiver 5. But the question here isn't about what's probable, it's about what's possible. And I do think that it's possible that Funchess goes from like 13% of Indianapolis's targets to maybe like 17%. That would be like a reasonable ceiling. If that were to happen, he'd be closer to 65 receptions, 775 yards, and 6-7 touchdowns. So I don't quite see a wide receiver 2 finish for Funchess unless he really outperforms in the touchdown column. But I do think a really solid wide receiver 3 season is in his reasonable range of outcomes. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. This last question is from @Eli_Stram. What is your take on Jarvis Landry this upcoming season? Wide receiver 2? So to me, Landry took a pretty big hit when OBJ was traded to Cleveland. There's zero chance that he sees the kind of volume that he saw last year in that offense. In relevant fantasy weeks last year, Landry saw about 26% of the team's attempts. But when Hugh Jackson was fired through the end of the season, Landry's target share fell to under 21%. There was a pretty big difference there. Now OBJ is in the mix. We know that they have weapons both out of the backfield and at tight end as well. That all comes together in making Landry a not-so-attractive fantasy asset here in 2019, at least when compared to how so many people are viewing him. So as it stands, my projections have him at 73 catches, 848 yards, and 5 touchdowns. That puts him in wide receiver 3 territory, which is lower than where his current ADP is on draft. That's going to do it for today's show, though. Thanks to all of you guys for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. And as always, you can follow me on Twitter at LateRoundQB. Don't forget to be on the lookout for a link to the live blog for the draft. Thanks, everyone. Enjoy the draft.